Someone's been using a mining drill on his head for the past week. Leah began walking away from him toward the single window. It showed a panorama of mist-obscured lights from the town and was blocked by the same configuration of thick, diagonally placed bars. "I know someone I'd like to take a drill to," she muttered disconsolately. "You mean Halla," Luke declared. "She couldn't and can't do a thing for us. If I were in her situation, I'd probably be running, too." Looking over at him, she smiled dazzlingly. "You know that's not true, Luke. You're too loyal and responsible for your own good." Her gaze turned back to the mist-shrouded roofs of the distant town. "If we hadn't lost control of ourselves back in front of the tavern, we wouldn't have attracted the attention of those miners. We wouldn't be here now. It's my fault." He put a reassuring hand on her shoulder. "Come on, Leah, princess. This mess was nobody's fault. Besides, it's fun losing control once in a while." She smiled again, thankfully. "You know, Luke, the Rebellion is lucky to have you. You're a good man." "Yeah," he turned away. "Lucky for the Rebellion." There was a chattering from across the cell. Leah eyed Luke questioningly. "Key says someone's coming," he translated. Together with the two Yuzum, they turned their attention to the corridor. Footsteps approached rapidly. Several stormtroopers appeared, an anxious Grammel leading them. He seemed to relax a little on catching sight of his prisoners. "You're both unharmed?" Luke nodded. "Good," he declared, visibly relieved. His gaze traveled to the Yuzum and back again to Luke. "I see you're sharing your cell agreeably, so far. I'm pleased. I was afraid I'd have to move you. But if the Yuzum can tolerate your presence, then I think you should stay. You'll be more secure in here. It develops that someone else has expressed an interest in your case." Luke looked blankly at the princess, who stared back with equal lack of comprehension. "Yeah, one of the enforcers back on Sir Carpus, I'll bet," Luke essayed boldly. "Not exactly." Another of those enigmatic half-smiles and sent chills down Luke's spine. "An Imperial representative is coming here to question you personally. That's enough for me. I know when to stand aside, so I'm not going to contact our sources on Sir Carpus until he tells me to." "Oh," was all Luke could find to say. He was at once pleased and concerned, pleased because their little tale of being escaped criminals from Sir Carpus was apparently going to avoid scrutiny for a little while longer. Concerned because he couldn't imagine anything Grammel might have told someone that would intrigue an Imperial representative. Where might they have slipped and revealed something? "Why would an Imperial representative be so interested in us?" he asked, fishing for information. "That's what I'd like to know," Grammel replied. He walked to stand next to the bars. "I don't suppose you'd care to tell me." "I don't know what you mean," Luke responded, stepping back from the bars. "I could make you tell me," Grammel growled, "but I've been ordered to—" He had to force himself away from the bars, "to leave you strictly alone. Don't let that make you confident. I am of the impression that this representative, and he is a very important one, will have his own plans for you, and that they will be more unpleasant than anything I, in my simple way, could devise." "You or some Imperial officer," Luke shrugged, affecting the casual attitude of the streetwise. "It's all the same to us, so long as we don't get sent back to Sir Carpus. Wish I knew why all the fuss over us, though." Grammel shook his head slowly. "You impress me, the two of you. I really wish you'd tell me who you are and what this is all about." He reached into a pocket and pulled out the little box containing the splinter of Kyber crystal. "But I don't suppose that you will," he concluded with a sigh, replacing the box in the pocket. "As my hands are now tied, I can't force it from you the way I'd like to. I must admit that whatever Governor Asada sees in you two escapes me utterly." An Imperial governor. Leah had slumped, was backing away and breathing unevenly, both hands going to her face. Sweat beaded on her forehead. Grammel was studying her intently. "Yes, why should that bother you so?" He glanced sharply at Luke. "What's going on here?" Ignoring him, Luke moved to comfort the princess. "Take it easy, Leah. It might not mean anything." "Imperial governors don't take an interest in common thieves, Luke," she whispered tightly. Something was clutching at her throat. "I'll be interrogated again, like that time. That time." She broke away, threw herself up against the back wall of the cell. "That time back on the Death Star." Small black worms crawled through her brain. Another governor's demands. The now-dead Grand Moff Tarkin, the machine drifting into her holding cell. The remorseless black machine, illegal, concocted by twisted Imperial scientists in defiance of every code, legal and moral. It drifted over to her, moved down, metal limbs preparing to perform efficiently, emotionlessly, in response to inhuman programming. Screaming, 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 never to stop, she was. Something hit her hard. She blinked, turned to see Luke looking at her, worried. She slid down to sit up against the wall. Hin had ambled over. The massive black-eyed Yuzum bent solicitously over her. One long arm went to touch her curiously, the long, flexible snout sniffing at her. "She'll be okay, Hin," Luke told the alien in its own language as he helped Leah wipe away cold tears. "Just the Empire's reputation for cruelty," he called back to Grammel. The explanation sounded lame, even to his own ears. Grammel pressed up against the bars again. "She's been through questioning before. She knows something," he insisted excitedly. "Who is she? Who are you two? Tell me." He pounded on the bars with a fist. "Tell me." Then his tone turned sly, soft. "Maybe I can intercede on your behalf with whomever the Imperial representative is. I want everything I can get out of this, you hear me? You two will be my ticket off this lost world. I want off, and I want the promotion Asada promised me, and I want more if I can get it. Tell me who you are, what you know. I'll bargain with you. Give me something to use, some information to trade with, so I won't meet your Inquisitor unarmed." Luke gave Grammel a pitying look. "Who are you?" Grammel screamed furiously, furious at his own helplessness to do anything but beg, an action he was unaccustomed to. "Why are you so important to him? Tell me, or I'll have the woman dismembered before your eyes, in spite of what Asada ordered. Tell me, tell me, tell me! Unk!" An enormous paw had shot through the bars and had Grammel by the throat, almost. With a desperate effort, the captain's supervisor barely managed to pull free. Another paw reached after the first. An alert trooper had dropped to one knee and fired his rifle. Even though it was set for stun, the bolt which caught Key in the side sent the Yuzum tumbling across the floor. A scorched black streak showed on the thick fur. Key rolled over, holding the burnt place, panting softly and staring through the bars. Hin moved to his injured companion and checked the wound, also glared frighteningly out at Grammel. Then he moved to the bars. Grammel stood just out of the long reach, not smiling as Hin lunged for his throat. A huge hand flailed in the air centimeters away while the captain's supervisor massaged his neck. The Yuzum grabbed the bars, pulled in opposite directions, straining, straining. Looking on with academic interest, Grammel reassured the sub-officer standing next to him. "There's no more danger, Pudra. They can't break those bars. Not a dozen Yuzum could." Despite this confidence, it seemed that Hin, with a supreme effort, actually did bend one bar slightly. Then he gave up, gasping deeply. Holding the bars and shaking with rage, he gave Grammel a stare of naked hatred. Grammel sighed a little in spite of himself. "See, I told you," he confided to the sub-officer. "You're all right, Captain Supervisor?" the man inquired from behind his armor. "Fine now, Pudra," he assured the subordinate. He made a show of wrinkling his nose, except for the smell, of course. He spoke easily to Luke. "You two must be special. Anyone who can stand the odor of a Yuzum." He made a face, shook his head in mock astonishment. To exist in that stink for more than a few minutes requires some special quality. Hin obliged by howling madly at the captain's supervisor. "Go ahead and rage," Grammel told Hin pleasantly. "As soon as I can convince the mine director that you two aren't worth the risk of rehabilitation for work, I'll disassemble you personally. After having you thoroughly deodorized, of course." He turned to leave. As he did so, Hin made a strange sound. It was followed by a forceful pfft from the long snout. The huge blob of spit struck Grammel on the back of the neck, just above the high collar. Wiping it away, the captain's supervisor growled viciously back over his shoulder. "You grinning travesty of a man! Soon, very soon, I promise." He gestured sharply to the troops, and they disappeared in a body up the corridor. Hin left the bars, walked back to check on the princess. She had fainted, and Luke was supporting her with one arm. A grumble, and Luke commented knowingly. "Yes, he's a prince, our jailer, isn't he?" By way of reply, Hin picked up a piece of gravel from the floor. Rolling it between two long fingers, he pulverized it effortlessly and let the dust trickle back to the ground. "I hope you can do that to him some day, Hin," Luke agreed, eyeing the Yuzum. Right now, though, I'm afraid our chances of getting out of here, let alone of getting to this captain supervisor, aren't very good. A moan, and the princess reached out toward Luke. He caught her hands, and she opened her eyes in surprise. An uncertain glance, then she saw the huge-eyed Hind staring at her curiously. I'm sorry, Luke. He helped her to her feet. The thought of going through an imperial interrogation again. I lost control. That's understandable. You won't go through another session. I'll see to that. She smiled at him. Why discourage such confidence with mere facts? Luke had moved to the single window, was testing the bars with exploratory pulls. They're just as solid as they look, he grunted. No way out here. The Yuzum probably already tried that, she pointed out reasonably. A small section of stone wall slid aside, and she jumped. A reassuring rush to the wall from both Yuzum caused Luke to relax. Several bowls and dishes of something steaming were slipped into the cell on smooth metal trays before the stone panel slid back into place. Hin and Key left no doubt as to the contents of the dishes. They grabbed one apiece and started wolfing down the contents. I don't think much of Yuzum table manners, Luke observed. I think if we want something to eat, we'd better hurry or they won't leave us a thing. Exchanging glances, they studied the contents of the two remaining trays. Luke sniffed of the contents of one bowl, shrugged, and tried a spoonful. Some kind of stew, he decided. Not bad for prison fare. Remember, Leah said, Grammel's under instructions to keep us healthy until the Imperial Governor's representative arrives. Luke paused between mouthfuls to venture hopefully. At least if we do get a chance to escape, we'll be able to do it on a full stomach. Luke finished his meal, rose, and walked over to the bars forming their cell. He stared down the corridor at the distant spot in the stone wall where the cell entry control was emplaced. Leah eyed him quietly. If only they could cover the recessed photosensitive switch with something, he mused. His gaze traveled around the cell. The trays on which their food had appeared were smooth, unmalleable metal, no way to attach them to one another. The result wouldn't be nearly long enough to reach the far-off switch anyway, and it was, self-evidently, well out of the extended reach of the two Yuzum. "We've got to get a hand or something over that switch," he muttered in frustration. "Or something, Luke boy." Everyone stared at the unexpected voice, especially the excitable Yuzum. Hin rushed toward the window, but Luke fortunately got there before him. "No, it's a friend, Hin." The Yuzum gibbered and clacked at him, but finally moved away. Luke rushed to the opening himself, grabbed the bars, and stood on tiptoe to look out. A wrinkled, smiling face stared brightly at him. "Hala," he almost shouted, "you didn't forget us after all." He tried to see past her. "What about 3PO and R2-D2? "Your droids are fine, boy. As for me, I never forget a partner. Besides, I need you too, so don't go emotional on me. It's the crystal I'm after." Her grin faded, and she stared hard at him. "Did you tell that maggot Grammel anything about me?" "No," Luke assured her. There was a cough, and he noticed the princess staring at him. "Well, not exactly," he corrected himself. "He thinks we were trying to sell the crystal fragment to you." Hala chuckled. "So that's why I wasn't brought in for questioning. Grammel always did see things through the wrong end. He's taken the fragment, I guess." "I'm sorry," Luke looked downcast. "We couldn't do anything about it." "Never mind, boy. We'll have the whole crystal soon. Soon's we get you out." "How? You've got something to blow the wall?" "Now that would be a waste of time, boy. What would you do, run away from here?" She paused, realization striking. "Say, I'll bet you can't see down out of this window, can you?" "No, only in a straight line," Luke admitted. "Boy, I'm standing on a ledge about 10 centimeters wide over a 40-meter deep trench. There's a barrier on the other side that would detect any energy weapons or explosives anyone tried to carry over here. Or did you think I was pressing this close to the wall because I like the way your breath smells?" "Hala, you're crazy. What if you slip?" "I'll make a small splash, Luke boy. As for the first, since everyone seems so sure I'm crazy, I don't see any harm in acting like it. Only a crazy old woman would come sliding out on this little bitty ledge here." "That means you couldn't negotiate it. No, boy, the only way out of here is back the way you came." A loud, exuberant grunting sounded behind Luke. Hin came over, put a hand on Luke's shoulder, and eyed Hala imploringly. Then he and Luke engaged in a rapid exchange of grunts. Hin walked back into the cell and commenced a low dialogue with Key, while Hala looked on uncertainly. "What was that all about?" she asked Luke. "I don't understand that monkey talk." "Hin told me," Luke translated for her, "that if you can get us out of the cell, Key and he will take care of getting us out of the building." "You think they can?" Hella wondered, licking her lips. Luke looked confident. "I wouldn't want to bet against a pair of desperate Yuzum. There's something else. If we help them escape, they'll help us in the hunt for the crystal." "A help they'd be," Hella admitted readily, "and I can see why they'd throw in with us. Once they break jail, they've no hope of leniency from Grammel. How are you going to get us out of here?" Hella adjusted her precarious stance above the sheer drop, then said proudly, "I told you I was a master of the Force. Stand aside, young man." Not knowing what to expect, Luke did as he was told. The princess folded her arms and looked skeptical and anxious simultaneously. Hala's eyes closed, and she appeared to enter some kind of trance. Luke felt the stirring, knew that she was manipulating the Force in a way he could never manage well. Not necessarily in a superior fashion, just different. His greatest concern was that in her altered condition she might lose her grip on the temple's exterior. But she remained in place as if frozen there, her brow contorted as she strained. He heard a gasp, and he spun around to look where the princess was pointing. One of the metal food trays had risen, drifted lazily in the air of the cell. It began moving toward the bars. Luke looked back at Hala. It was a simple parlor trick, but one he could never have duplicated. Levitation was not a skill he had mastered very well, but it seemed to be the one thing Hala could do. He remembered the spice shaker on the tavern table and held his breath. Sweating, her face twisted with the effort, Hala moved the tray. It thumped against the bars. Luke winced, thinking it might be too wide to squeeze through any of the openings, but the tray turned, angled to match the bars, and slipped through with a slight scraping sound. Fluttering, it continued drifting up the corridor. Hala was hardly breathing now, her entire being thrown into the tremendous effort she was making. Luke watched as the tray dipped, rose to its former height, dipped again before continuing on up the corridor. "Boy," came an echo of the old woman's voice, "you gotta help me." Her eyes were still closed. "I can't, Hala," he told her tightly. "I'm no good at this." "Got to, boy. Can't hold it myself much longer." Even as she finished, the tray dipped, struck the ground with a clang before rising once again. Luke shut his own eyes and tried to concentrate only on the tray, ignoring the cell, the princess, everything but that floating, flat plane of formed metal. A familiar voice seemed to remind him of something. "Don't try so hard, Luke," the voice said. "Remember how I taught you. Relax, relax. Let the Force work through you. Don't try to force the Force." Letting other thoughts leak into his mind, pleasant thoughts, Luke strove to comply. A general sense of well-being flowed through him, and he smiled. The tray lifted firmly to its former height, continued on up the hallway at a rapid pace. The princess switched her gaze constantly from Luke to Hala and back. Striking the corridor wall, the tray commenced bumping along it. It finally reached the recessed control, turned itself flat to the wall, and covered the depression. A very faint click sounded. An open ellipsoid appeared in the middle of the cell bars. Hala let out a long, slow sigh and wavered, almost falling. She caught herself as the tray plunged toward the floor. Hin and Key gasped, as did the princess. Luke leaned forward, his brows lifting sharply. Something caught the tray barely a centimeter above the hard stone floor and lowered it, gently and silently, the rest of the way. First through the gap were the two Yuzum. The princess followed immediately behind. Once clear, she turned and called to Luke. "What are you waiting for? Come on!" But Luke was back at the window. "Are you all right, old woman?" "I will be," Hala quipped, her face still showing the strain, "if you don't call me that too often. Couldn't have done it without your help, boy. Your control is good." "Not as good as your guidance," he responded gently. "You showed me the way. I've been lucky. I've had good teachers." She reached through the bars and patted his hand. "You're kind, Luke, boy. There's a big landspeeder garage and maintenance yard nearby. You turn right as you exit this mausoleum and pass some prefab administrative co-ops. Continue on until you hit a small, adjusted stream. Turn right again, follow the stream. You'll pass a few more larger buildings. Eventually, you'll reach the depot. The garage is the big structure on the immediate left. I'll meet you there with your droids. What happens when we get there? Happens. Why, boy, we've got to steal a land speeder or crawl high. Or do you think we're going to walk to the crystal? Not on this planet. See you there. Right, Luke acknowledged. Hurry up, Luke, the princess was calling to him, expecting a flood of troops at any moment. When he didn't reply, she rushed back into the cell, grabbed one arm, and pulled. He came willingly, still glancing back toward the window Halla had already abandoned. A loud commotion sounded ahead, and Luke made worried noises. What's wrong? The princess asked, trying to see around corners in front of them. It's the Yuzum. Sounds like they're having fun, she demurred, after an especially violent crashing echoed down the corridor. We ought to be trying to sneak out of here quietly. A subtle Yuzum. You might as well wish for a squadron of Y-wings, she snorted derisively. She picked up the tray and passed it over the cell lock, then slipped it back inside the bars. That should give them something to think about, she announced with satisfaction. Let them think we dematerialize the bars. It won't bother Grammel, but it might make some of the troops uneasy. I want anyone trailing me to be as nervous as possible. Together they started up the corridor. Hin and Key were waiting around the second corner. The first Jezum was standing over the limp form of three troopers. He was using a droid to beat a fourth soldier to a pulp. The droid he was holding by one leg was coming apart at roughly the same rate as the man. Key had a long armful of weapons apparently taken from the decommissioned troopers. Luke caught a pistol, tossed to him, as did Leah, while the two aliens armed themselves. Key promptly assumed a listening pose, turned and dashed toward a far doorway. No, not now, Luke protested. Reaching out, he came away with two handfuls of brown hair. This did not seem to affect the big alien in the least. I was afraid of this, he groaned. It took only seconds for Key to flatten the door and burst inside. They followed. The large room was a communications center, possibly the central one for the whole temple complex. Key was rushing about, firing wildly with a rifle held in one massive hand, while using the other to demolish both instrumentation and operators with casual indifference as to whether the target was inorganic or protesting. Luke charged in behind, yelling in Yuz, "We've got to get out of here, Key. Listen to me." No use. The creature was beyond reason. Luke left the room. As he did so, an energy bolt smashed into the wall just above them. Dropping to one knee, he whirled and fired his pistol, dropping an Imperial trooper down a secondary corridor. Leah caught another in the midsection, and the remaining pair dove for cover, firing as they did. "Regulars are beginning to show up, Luke," she shouted. "We can't stay. We've got to get out." "I can see that," Luke shot back nervously. He pressed back against the wall, pushed and shoved at Hin to get his attention. "Come on, Hin. Use your head instead of your back for a change." The big Yuzum growled dangerously at him. Luke didn't let that intimidate him. "I know this whole place stinks. I'd like to blow it to hell and be gone myself, but we're just a little outnumbered." Hin bared sharp canines, grabbed Luke by the neck. Luke stared resolutely at his furry visage. Abruptly, the hand moved away, and Hin nodded slowly, giving out with an apologetic grunt. "Okay, then," Luke sighed. "Go get Key." Another bolt broke stone above them, and he turned to return the fire. The hallway was starting to fill with Imperial troops. Luke retreated up the hall, called, "Come on, Leah!" Under his covering fire, she ran to join him. Then the two of them covered the aliens' retreat. As Key emerged from the communications room, a tremendous explosion shattered the door frame behind him. Smoke and flame gushed from the ruined portal, singeing back fur, but that helped screen them from the massing troops. Hin had a surprise for Luke and handed it to him expectantly. "My lightsaber, where'd you find it?" The Yuzum explained that the soldier who had appropriated it wouldn't need it any more. Luke refastened the heirloom at his belt as the four of them ran for the front of the building, leaving confusion and blood in equal amounts behind them. Chapter 7, page 104. Grammel rushed into the corridor, several troops at his heels. The captain supervisor finished buckling on his pants and screamed at the assembled mass of troops. "What the double moons is happening here?" Get down, sir," one of the sub-officers yelled frantically to him. "What for, you idiot?" Grammel roared. "Can't you see they're interested in escaping, not in killing you?" Pulling a pistol from its holster, he grabbed at the sergeant next to him. "Get in there," he instructed the non-com as he gestured toward the communications room with the pistol, "and tell them to secure every exit. No one goes in or out of the complex until I give my personal okay. Yes, Captain Supervisor. As the sergeant rushed from the room, Grammel led the by now enormous body of armed troops up the smoking hallway. Very soon the sergeant exited from the room, shouted after them that communications were out and everyone inside was dead or dying. But Grammel was already out of earshot. The sergeant rushed after him. Luke threw up a warning hand, and the four would-be escapees slowed to a halt. "There's the exit," he informed them, pointing around the corner. Ahead lay double transparent doors leading to the now attractive damp ground outside. An unarmored soldier sat scribbling at a desk to one side of the doorway. "They haven't gotten the alarm here yet," Luke muttered. "That won't last long," the princess declared knowingly. "He's not alone." She indicated the two guards flanking the exit. Each was armed with assorted devices in addition to a brace of heavy rifles. Luke leaned against the wall, thinking furiously. It was a long way across an open floor to the doorway. "We could cover the Yuzum," the princess suggested, "if they can take out the man at the desk before he can sound an alarm." "No," Luke objected, "too risky. If the two guards are good shots, he and Kin will both be killed. Maybe if you and I put our weapons down and fake one of us being in trouble..." "Well," Luke went on thoughtfully, "we could make some noise here, maybe draw one or both of them away from the alarm switches." Hin and Key listened a minute longer to the two humans chattering, then exchanged glances. Hin grunted, and Key nodded in reply. An ear-splitting shriek made both Luke and Leah jump. Waving their gangly arms and brandishing their rifles like toys, the two Yuzum went charging around the corner like a hirsute avalanche. The tactic was unrefined, but it worked. All three guards became momentarily paralyzed by the sight of the two giants bearing down on them. At the desk, the uniformed trooper shakily hit two studs, neither of them the right one. Hin was on the first guard before he could raise his heavy weapon. It went off, blasting a gaping hole in the floor. Without bothering to remove the man's armor, Hin proceeded to dismember him. Key picked up the entire desk and communications console and brought it down the terrified trooper behind it. The other guard finally unlimbered his heavy weapon. He was taking aim on the nearest rampaging Yuzum. "Key, look out!" Luke yelled, even as he and Leah were charging around the corner and across the alcove. A bolt of energy ionized the air above the Yuzum and then exploded against the far wall. Luke dropped the guard with one burst from his pistol. By then the princess had reached the double doors and was trying the manual release frantically. "It's no good, Luke. It's got to be activated remotely. From that, probably," she pointed to the demolished desk. Luke looked around, started fumbling at the body of the soldier he'd shot. There were several smooth, hand-sized canisters attached to the man's waist, and he was carefully removing them. Taking action of his own, Hin yanked the helmet off the man he had killed. Placing it over his fist, he began punching at the transparent doors. Despite the Yuzum's enormous strength, the fragile-looking material refused to crack. "That won't work, Hin," Luke finally informed him, hurrying up alongside. "Security material. You'd never break through. Get behind the corner. You too, Princess." She didn't argue with him. Together with the two Yuzum, she rushed to take cover around the bend from which they'd attacked. Luke twisted the dial set on top of the canister, flipped the small cylinder over, and adjusted a matching dial set on the bottom. After placing it at the junction of the double doors, he ran to join his companions. Several seconds passed. The blast gave the feeling that lightning had struck just behind them. Green fire flared around the corner, faded instantly to acrid smoke. When they peered around the wall, they saw that both doors and a portion of the building's foundation had vanished. "They've improved those things," Luke observed professionally. Princess didn't wait for the smoke to dissipate. She was already picking her way toward freedom through the steaming rubble. Hin and Key followed close behind. A shot passed over Luke's head, and he ducked, hesitated. Leah had reached the gaping hole where the doorway had been. She paused, looked back, and waved anxiously. "Come on, Luke." But Luke was busy. Kneeling on the floor while bolts continued to strike around him, he activated the remaining three canisters he'd taken. One energy bolt struck dangerously close, making him blink. Rapidly, he rolled each canister down the hallway, then rose and ran madly after his companions. Grammel and the mass of troops behind him pulled up short as the canisters came rolling and bouncing innocently toward them. The corridor cleared with inhuman speed. Luke passed through the blown doorway, counting out loud to himself. When he got to 6, he threw himself to the ground and placed both arms over his face. 3 titanic explosions erupted inside the temple, sending shards of both modern metal and ancient stone woo-wooing over his head. When the debris finally stopped falling, he scrambled to his feet and ran on. Leia and the Yuzum left their concealing trees and rushed to meet him. "However, I am straightforward," Grandma continued, gazing down at her. Using his leg again, he kicked her right arm out from under her. She fell forward, then rolled over and sat up, still holding her left leg. The captain's supervisor kicked out sharply, catching the base of the spine, but not hard enough to paralyze her. She wailed as both hands went to the small of her back, and she fell over on her side, where she lay, moaning. Grammel drew back his leg again. Unable to stand it by any longer, Luke stepped between them, said rapidly, "If I told you the truth, Captain Supervisor, you wouldn't believe me." That offer was intriguing enough to cause Grammel to forget the princess for a moment. "I'm always willing to listen, young man." Luke took a disconsolate breath, looked downcast. "We're escaped criminals from Sir Carpus," he confessed painfully. "We're wanted there for extortion and blackmail." He indicated the prone form of the princess. "The girl's my partner in Lure. We made the mistake of compromising some people who turned out to be more important than we thought. We're not very important criminals, but we managed to get some very important people mad at us." He stopped. "Go on," urged Grammel noncommittally. "Sir Carpus still maintains the death penalty for many crimes," Luke continued. "It's a hectic private enterprise-style world." "I know all about Sir Carpus," the captain's supervisor snapped impatiently. Luke hastened to go on with his story. "We stole a small lifeship. We'd heard about the small colonies on 12 and 10. "So you tried to flee there?" Grammel interjected. "Logical enough. In hopes of finding a way to gain passage out-system," Luke finished rapidly. His enthusiasm was honest, because Grammel, at least so far, hadn't rejected the story out of hand. "We even," he added for good measure, "went so far as to consider joining the rebels if that would help us escape prosecution." "You'd both make pretty pitiful traitors," Grammel observed. "The rebels would have sneered at you. They don't enroll criminals in their ranks. Odd, since they're all technically the worst sort of criminals. Anyone can see by looking at you that you'd never be accepted by them." Fortunately, the princess was in too much pain to snicker, Luke knew. "I happen to think that your story, young man, though plausible, is a cleverly crafted falsehood." Luke went cold inside. "But it could be true. If that's the case, if you are what you claim to be, we might even manage to bend the laws a little for you. I admire ingenuity in others. We might even find something for you to do here on Ninbam. The Empire has many malcontents working in the mines. You have already encountered 5 of them. Of course," he concluded, "I could always return you to Sir Carpus for prosecution there." "Oh, no, Captain Supervisor," Luke cried, dropping to his knees and clutching desperately at Grammel's trouser legs. "Please don't do that. They'll have us executed. Please, we'll work till we drop, but don't send us back there." He was sobbing openly now. "Get off my boots," Grammel ordered disgustedly. As Luke backed away obediently, the Captain Supervisor bent to brush at his pants where Luke had touched them. Wiping tears conjured with difficulty away from his eyes, Luke tried not to appear too hopeful as he regarded Grammel. The princess, meanwhile, had shifted to a sitting position. She was still rubbing the small of her back with one hand, carefully avoiding Grammel's gaze. "As I stated, everything you've told me is possible and unlikely," the captain's supervisor went on. He eyed Luke in a funny way. "There is one thing which does interest me, however. It would be a sign of your good faith if you were honest with me about it." "I don't understand, Captain Supervisor," Luke admitted blankly. "I am told," Grammel continued, "that you have in your possession a small gemstone." Luke froze. Chapter 5, page 74. "Great Captain Supervisor," he finally managed to say, "I'm not sure what you mean." "Please," Grammel requested, showing a hint of genuine emotion for the first time, "don't toy with me. You were observed conversing with a local person," the last words uttered with obvious distaste, "whose presence here is barely tolerated by the Imperial law. She remains always just the safe side of illegality. Despite personal feelings, deporting her illegally and unnecessarily would irritate certain segments of the populace who find her amusing. Besides, it would be expensive. You were seen showing her a small glowing red stone, something you acquired during your illegal sojourning on Sarcarpus, perhaps? Luke's thoughts were in turmoil. Unquestionably, some informant of Grammel's, probably the tiny cloaked figure the captain supervisor had talked with some minutes ago, had seen the shard of Kyber crystal that Halla had presented to them. But the spy hadn't seen Halla bring it out and show it to Luke. So Grammel and his spy were assuming that the stone was something Luke had brought with him and was showing to Halla, which was fine for the old woman, he thought. She shouldn't be drawn into this now. For an awful moment, Luke thought that Grammel might be a force sensitive with the knowledge and ability to operate the crystal, or at least to sense its special property. But a hasty reaching out revealed only the usual vapid vacuum associated with normal humans hovering about Grammel's mind. He couldn't suspect anything about the fragment's real importance. Nevertheless, Luke balked at turning over the precious splinter to a servant of the Empire. Grammel wasn't one to waste time. "Come on, young man, you seem like a sensible sort. Surely it can't be worth additional inconvenience to you." "Really," Luke insisted, stalling frantically, "I don't know what you're talking about." "Oh, if you will press me," Grammel responded, not particularly displeased. He turned his attention to the princess, who continued to sit on the floor nursing her bruises. "The young lady is something more than a business associate, maybe? She means something to you?" Luke shrugged elaborately. "She means nothing to me." "Fine," said the captain's supervisor. "Then you won't mind what's going to happen next." He gestured to the sergeant. The armor-clad soldier walked over and reached down for the princess. Leah reached up to grab his hand, slipped the leg under his, and pulled and kicked simultaneously. As the trooper went crashing to the floor, she was rushing for the doorway, calling for Luke to follow. No matter how she tried the door key and switch, it wouldn't open for her. "You're wasting your time, my dear," Grammel advised her. "You should have gone for his weapon. The door is keyed to me, personally, to certain close members of my staff, and to troopers who have the proper resonator built into their armor. You don't qualify at any level, I'm afraid." Angry now, the sergeant was back on his feet, moving toward her with open arms. She started to run past him, stumbled and went sprawling to the floor. Grammel loomed over her, his right hand forming into a fist. "No," Luke exclaimed at the absolute last possible moment. Grammel's hand paused in midair as he glanced back at him. "That's much better," he advised Luke. "Better to be sensible than obstinate. I'll find the stone anyway, of course, but you'd find the finding unpleasant." Luke unsnapped a pocket, reached in. "You can't," a voice objected. He turned to see the princess staring up at him. Evidently she'd come to believe at least part of Halla's story. Or maybe, he corrected himself, she was simply playing out her part of the petty thief, reluctant to part with hard-won goods. With no choice. As long as Grammel didn't ask for names, he saw no point in volunteering any, faked or otherwise. Unwrapping the small box, he handed it to the expectant administrator. Grammel eyed it, asked a question Luke hadn't prepared for. "What's the combination?" For a second, Luke panicked. If he confessed that he didn't know the combination, his whole carefully fabricated lie would disintegrate here and now. So he took the only gamble he could. "It's open." Both he and Leah held their breath as Grammel touched the tiny catch. There was an audible click. Luke had never bothered to re-scramble the combination after Halla had given him the box. Captain Supervisor Grammel stared fascinated at the fragment of glowing crimson. "Very pretty. What is it?" "I don't know," Luke lied. "I have no idea what kind of a gem it is." Grammel looked sternly at him. It's true. I'm no gemologist or a chemist." There, that much was easily said. "Is the glow natural?" Grammel inquired, "or the result of external excitation?" He moved the gem around in the box with a probing finger. "I've no idea. It's glowed ever since we've had it, so I'd hazard a guess that it's a natural property of the stone." The captain supervisor smiled at him in a way he didn't like. "If you know so little about it, why did you steal it?" "I didn't say we stole it," Grammel snickered derisively, and Luke, playing the part willingly, assumed a defensive attitude. "All right, we stole it. It was pretty, and I'd never seen anything like it. Anything pretty and rare is likely to be valuable." "You told me your field of expertise was extortion, not burglary," Grammel countered. The thing intrigued me, and I had the chance to swipe it, so I did, Luke responded with a touch of belligerent bravado. Apparently that was the right approach. Sensible, Grammel conceded. He turned his gaze back to the splinter. I don't recognize it either. As a gem, it's not very impressive, not faceted or even trimmed for cutting. But you're right about it being unusual. The radiant property alone is enough to mark it as that. Abruptly, he stopped turning it over and over with his finger, moved his hand away. It's not harmful, is it? Not so far, Luke conceded, affecting an attitude of sudden concern. Let Grammel sweat a little. You haven't suffered any ill effects since it's been in your possession? Not until we brought it here. That almost produced laughter from the administrator. I think, he went on slowly, putting the box down on his desk and moving away from it, that I'll have it analyzed professionally before I come to any conclusions about it. He looked up amiably at Luke. It's been confiscated, of course. You may consider it your fine for being involved in the fight. We were the ones assaulted, Luke argued for appearance's sake. Are you disputing my judgment? Grammel asked dangerously. No, Captain Supervisor. That's good. I can see you're an intelligent young man. Pity your companion works her mouth to the exclusion of her brain. Leah glared at him, but for once had the sense not to say anything. I believe we can work something out. Meanwhile, it remains that you two are here on this world illegally, in defiance of a great deal of Imperial effort to keep this installation a secret, so you will be detained until I can verify your story. Luke started to speak, but Grammel waved him to silence. No, don't bother with names. I'd expect you to offer me an alias anyway. We'll take retinal prints, natural portraits, and other suitable information. I have contacts on Sir Carpus, both legal and not so. If they send me back information that you two are known petty criminals on that world, and judging from your story you ought to be known, then what you've told me will be substantiated, and we'll adjust relationships accordingly, and not necessarily to your detriment. If it turns out that no one unearths any information on you, or information that conflicts with what you've said, then I'll have to assume that everything you've told me is pure fabrication. In that unfortunate event, I'll be forced to resort to indelicate methods of obtaining the truth. Luke would have preferred any kind of smile to the empty, inhuman expression Grammel wore as he said that. But there's no reason why we can't be pleasant about things until then. Sergeant? Captain Supervisor, the non-com acknowledged, stepping over smartly. See these two escorted to the restraining area. Which cell, sir? The maximum secure holding pen, Grammel replied, his face unreadable. The sergeant hesitated. But, sir, that cell's already occupied. Its occupants are dangerous. They've already put three men in the infirmary. No matter, Grammel insisted indifferently. I'm sure these two can handle themselves. Besides, prisoners don't fight other prisoners. Not too often, anyway. What are you talking about? The princess demanded to know, climbing to her feet. What are you caging us with? You'll find out, Grammel assured her pleasantly. Several troops entered the room and boxed themselves around Luke and Leia. Please try to keep yourselves alive until I can check on your story. I'd be distressed if it developed that you've been telling me the truth and couldn't survive the company of your cell companions long enough to be released. We've been honest with you, Luke insisted, sounding desperate. Sergeant? The non-com led the two prisoners to the exit. Grammel ignored Luke's entreaties to know what they were being sent to. When they were gone and the chamber was quiet again, the captain's supervisor spent several minutes gazing at the glowing fragment of crystal. Then he touched a switch behind his desk. Another door opened, and a small, cloaked figure entered the room for the second time. "That's the thing you saw, Bot," said Grammel, gesturing at the open box sitting on the desk, a nod from the hooded shape. "You know what it is? A negative shape this time." "Neither do I," Grammel confessed. "I think the youth underestimates its strangeness. I've never seen or heard of anything remotely like it. Have you?" Another sidewise shake of the hooded skull. Grammel glanced at the closed doorway where Luke and Leah had been taken out. Those two could be what the boy said they were. I don't know. I have the feeling his story is a little too neat, too convenient, almost as if he were gauging his responses to what I wanted to hear. I can't decide whether he's an inefficient crook or a supernally smooth liar. Something else. He sounded almost confident that he and the girl could make contact with rebels on 10 or 12. None of our agents have been able to do that. A husk of a sentence from the figure, and Grammel nodded. I know that the rebels have ways of separating true traitors from our people, but the boy's confidence still troubles me. It seems misplaced in a petty criminal. And the girl had more spirit than her type normally displays. I am puzzled, Bot, but I think there might be something important in all this. I just don't have the facts available to glue it all together with yet. It might mean much to us both. The figure nodded vigorously, pleased. Grandma reached a decision. I'm going to have to contact higher authority. I don't like the idea of sharing anything like this, but I don't see a way around it. He jerked his head contemptuously toward the door. In any event, we'll cut the truth out of them before anyone of importance can get here. Leaving the desk, he walked to a wall behind it and touched a small switch. A section of wall vanished, leaving revealed behind a blank screen of golden hue. Grandma adjusted another control. A panel awash with dials and studs slid out from the wall beneath the reflective screen. Further adjustment, and then he spoke into a protruding VO pickup. I have a deep space communication of the first priority for Governor Bin Esada on the territorial administrative world of Gindeen. He glanced back at the cloaked form for reassurance, was rewarded with a nod. Call is being processed, a computer voice declared flatly. Visual static appeared for a moment, then the screen cleared with gratifying speed. By imperial distances, Gindeen was not very far away. The portrait that appeared on the screen was of an overweight, swarthy individual whose most outstanding feature was a series of chins falling in steps to the upper part of his shirt. Curly black hair, touched with white at the sides, and dyed orange in a spiral pattern on top, crowned the face like seaweed on some water-worn boulder. Dark eyes squinted perpetually, their pink pupils ever sensitive to light. "I have work to do," Governor Esada grunted in a porcine contralto. "Who calls and what for?" With that smug, powerful visage looming over him on the screen, much of Gramble's customary assurance melted away. His own words came out sounding shaky and subservient. "It is only I, Governor, a humble servant of the Emperor, Captain Supervisor Gramble." "I don't know any Captain Supervisor Gramble," the voice said. "I am in charge of the secret mining colony on Sir Carpus V, sir," explained Gramble hopefully. Esada paused momentarily, looking up from the tape he was inspecting. "I am familiar with the Imperial operations in that system," he replied guardedly. "What business do you have that requires first priority with me?" The huge bulk leaned forward. "It had better be important, Captain Supervisor Grammel. I know you now." "Yes, sir," Grammel bowed his head repeatedly to the screen. "It's a matter involving two strangers who somehow sat down here secretly. Two strangers and a peculiar bit of crystal they had in their possession. The people aren't important, but as you, sir, are widely famed as an expert on unusual radiations, I thought perhaps—" "Don't waste my time with flattery, Grammel," Esada warned. "Since the Emperor dissolved the Senate, we regional governors have been overwhelmed with work." "I understand, sir," Grammel said hastily, rushing to gather up a tiny box containing the stone. He held it so that the viz pickup in the room could see it. "Here it is." Esada peered at it. "Strange. I've never seen anything like that, Grammel. The radiation is generated from within?" "Yes, sir, I'm certain." "I'm not," the governor replied, "but I admit it looks to be so. Tell me more about the people who had it." Grammel shrugged. "They're nothing. Probably just a couple of petty thieves who stole it, sir." "A couple of petty thieves penetrated and landed in secret on Sir Carpus V?" said the governor disbelievingly. "I think so, sir. A boy and a young woman." "Young woman?" Esada repeated. "We've heard rumors from Sir Carpus IV about an important meeting that the underground leaders there were preparing for. A young woman, you say? Would she be dark-haired, fiery-tempered, perhaps even a touch sarcastic?" "The very person, sir," a startled Grammel stammered. "You have identified them?" "No, sir. We've only just imprisoned them. They've been jailed together with—" "Chaos, take your details," Grammel Esada shouted. "Give me visual representation of both of these people." "That is easily done," a relieved Grammel replied. He took the plastic recorder rod from the desk, held it up uncertainly before the screen. "This has not yet been transferred, sir. Do you think you can make out the rod imagery?" "I can make out many things, Grammel, down to the shallow depths of your own soul. Place it close to your viz pickup." The administrator adjusted the requisite switch and placed the long, glassy tube close to the screen panel. He touched the retrieval stud, and two-dimensional portraits appeared within the rod's substance. A pause, and then he shifted the rod to show full-length views of both subjects. "It may be her. By the Force, it just may be," Governor Asada muttered, now excited. "The youth, I don't know, but he may also be important. I am pleased." "Important, sir? You know of them?" "I hope to have part credit for their capture and eventual execution. Hers, at least," Asada looked sharply at the bewildered officer. "They must not be harmed or injured until proper authority arrives for them, Grammel." "It shall be as you say, sir," a bemused captain supervisor conceded. "But I don't understand. Who are they? And how do they come to the notice of someone such as—" "I require only service from you, Grammel, not questions." "Yes, sir," the administrator barked stiffly. Asada took a lighter tack. "You did well to contact me directly, though not for the reasons you thought. Once those two are in Imperial hands, you will become Colonel Supervisor Grammel." "Governor!" Grammel lost his poise completely. "Sir, you are too generous. I don't know what to say." "Say nothing," Asada suggested. "It makes you more tolerable. Keep them alive, Grammel. Whether you go to hell or glory is dependent on how well you carry out these orders. Beyond keeping them alive and healthy, you have my permission to restrain them as you please." "Yes, sir." "Sir, may I—" But Governor Asada had already all but forgotten Grammel. One particular party should find this information of particular notice. "It will be well for me, yes." Abruptly, he noticed that communications were still open. "Alive, Grammel, remember that. But, sir, can't you tell?" The screen went blank. The captain supervisor stood motionless before the dark rectangle for several long, thoughtful moments. Then he repositioned screen and control panel, turned to the cloaked figure which was crawling out from behind the concealing bulk of a free-formed chair across the room. "We appear to have stumbled onto something far more important than either of us dreamed, Bot. Colonel Supervisor." He gazed down at the crystal in his hands, all thoughts of its possible lethal nature shunted aside by the vision of the glittering future ahead of him. "We must take care." The cloaked figure nodded energetically. Chapter 6, page 85. "Take it easy," Luke complained, shrugging his arm free of the trooper who was escorting them down the long, narrow stone hallway. As they paced, Luke took the opportunity to study the damp, dripping walls. Some of them showed dark moss. Clearly, the omnipresent moisture of Mimban penetrated the old walls here. "You'd think the Imperial government could have invested some credit in modern quarters," he murmured. "Why," the sub-officer ahead of them wanted to know, "when the primitives of this world left us such useful structures?" "A temple, a place of worship, and it's been turned into offices and a prison," the princess declared angrily. "The Empire does what is necessary," the sub-officer observed in a phlegmatic manner which would have gratified his superiors. "I am told this mining is an expensive venture. The Empire is smart enough to save where it is able," he concluded with pride. "That probably extends to your pay and retirement benefits," the princess ventured maliciously. "That's enough talk from the prisoners," the disgruntled sub-officer decided aloud, unhappy with the turn the conversation had taken. They rounded a sharp corner. A network of intersecting diagonal bars formed an unbreakable mesh at the end of the corridor. "Here's your new home," the sub-officer informed them. "Inside, you can muse about what the Empire has in store for your future." As the sub-officer passed a palm over the wall on his immediate right, an unbarred ellipsoid appeared in the center of the metal grill. "Move," the trooper next to Luke ordered, prodding him with his rifle. "I was told we were going to have company," Luke ventured, walking toward the empty space with great reluctance. This provoked considerable merriment among the assembled troopers. "You'll find it soon enough," the sub-officer chuckled, "or it'll find you." Once both prisoners stood inside the cell, the sub-officer passed his hand over the photoplate again, and the dematerialized bars reappeared with a solid clank. "Company," he says, one of the retreating troopers echoed as they walked back up the corridor. They continued laughing among themselves. "For some reason I'm not amused," Luke muttered. Each of the angled bars was as big around as his forearm. He flicked one with a nail, and it rang like a bell. "Solid, not tubular," he announced. "This cell was designed to hold more than ordinary people. I wonder what." The princess gasped, pointed to a far corner, and began backing toward the nearest wall. Two massive, hairy mounds lay clustered near the back of the cell under the single window. The fur moved up and down, indicating it was surrounding something alive. Easy. And putting both hands on her shoulders, she leaned into him. We don't know who they are yet. We don't know what they are, the princess whispered fearfully. I think they're waking up. One of the huge shapes stood, stretched, let out a grunt like a volcano clearing its throat. It turned and caught sight of them. Luke's eyes bugged. He started toward the figure. The princess put out a hand to hold him back, but he shook it off. Are you out of your mind, Luke? They'll tear you to pieces. He continued walking slowly toward the waiting figure. It stood little taller than he did, but was built much more massively. Its hair-covered arms reached to the cell floor, the hands dragging on a stone. A long snout protruded from the center of the face, obscuring any mouth. Two huge black eyes stared expectantly at him. Luke, don't do this. Come back here. A querulous growl rumble, sounding like an angry underground spring, came from the figure Luke was nearing. The princess became quiet, pressed worriedly back against the cold stone wall as she slid toward the farthest corner. Luke eyed the massive creature warily. They had to make friends fast, or he and Leah wouldn't have to worry about getting off Mimban except in fragments. He reached out, touched an arm in a certain way. His eyes never left the jet-black orb staring into his own. With startling speed, the creature took a backward hop, chittered something. It was several times Luke's weight. Dim light from the sealed illuminators in the cell ceiling shone on cable-like shoulder muscles above those double-length arms. A pair of plate-sized hands reached out for Luke. He responded by uttering something in low tones. Shaking its head, its snout swinging, the creature hesitated, then rumbled again. Luke spoke louder, gibberish at it. Reaching out, the beast grabbed Luke with both hands and lifted him off the ground over its head, as if preparing to dash him against the stone floor. The princess screamed. The creature brought Luke close to its body, closer, and planted a wet kiss on each of Luke's cheeks before setting him gently back on the floor. The princess stared in disbelief at Luke's affectionate assailant. Why didn't it tear your head off? She gazed at Luke admiringly. You talked to it. Yes, Luke admitted modestly. I used to study a lot about certain worlds back on my uncle's farm on Tatooine. It was my only escape, and educational as well. This, and he indicated the creature resting a long, massive arm on his head and shaking him in a friendly passion, is a Yuzum. I've heard of them, but this is the first time I've seen one. They're temperamental, Luke told her, so I thought it would be better to try and make the first greeting ourselves, using what little language I learned. He jabbered at the creature, which chittered back. It might have killed me somewhere else, but all prisoners are allies, it seems. The Yuzum turned, staggered backward, and bumped into the wall. It leaned over and began shaking its still somnolent companion. The second Yuzum rolled over awake and swung angrily at the first. The massive hand missed, instead connecting with the wall hard enough to leave an impression in the rock. Rolling to a sitting position, it started chittering to its waker, holding its head with one hand. Why, Leah exclaimed as the realization struck her, they're both drunk. The second Yuzum finally managed to get to its feet. It growled at her. No offense, she quickly added. The one I talk to is called, as near as I can translate it, Hin. That's Key leaning against the wall, wishing to be someplace else. He jabbered at Hin, listening to the reply. I think he said that they've been working for the Imperial government's operation here, got fed up about a week ago and started breaking things. They've been locked in here ever since. I didn't know the Imperials were hiring non-humans. Apparently these two didn't have any choice, Luke explained, listening to Hin. They don't like the Imperials any more than we do. I've been trying to convince them that all humans aren't like the Imperials. I'm pretty sure I'm succeeding. I hope so, Leah said, eyeing the massively muscled, long-armed creatures. Both Hin and Key are young, about our age, and not very experienced in Imperial affairs. They signed themselves into, well, I guess you couldn't quite call it slavery, but indentured servitude is too polite a term. When they protested, finally some mine official waved a lot of documents at them and made jokes, so they took their equipment and started trying to fill in the mine instead of emptying it out. According to Hin, the only reason Grammel didn't have them shot immediately was because each of them does the work of any three men and because they were both intoxicated out of their minds. A Apparently, Yuzum, he added unnecessarily, have long hangovers. Hin believes the Imperials will give them another chance, but he's not so sure he wants one. They're in here because the regular cells won't hold them. Come say hello. The princess hesitated, and Luke walked over to her and whispered, It's okay. I think we could count on them, but better not to tell them who we are. She nodded, walked over, and reached out with a hand. It vanished into a hairy paw. Hin chattered at her. The same, I'm sure, she said, gaining confidence rapidly. He howled, and both humans looked to the other Yuzum, who babbled at Luke. Say,